Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Two Wisconsin Supreme Court justices were in La Crosse this week to recognize the contributions of women in the Badger State. Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley are two of four women on the High Court. In fact, women make up the majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, a major accomplishment. 35 years ago, Chief Justice Abrahamson was the first woman to serve on the court. I'll talk with the justices about women's accomplishments, but first, I asked Chief Justice Abrahamson whether or not the court was likely to take up a controversial law that would require voters to present an ID before they vote. It's a law that was recently struck down by the circuit courts.
Well, the court will take up the issue when it's on an appropriate agenda. When the court meets, the court makes decisions by all seven of us sitting together, analyzing the issues, and then issues a written decision. One of the reasons that the court, unlike other bodies, deliberates privately is because in decisions we explain carefully our reasoning so that the public will know. So I will say to you that the court knows it's on the docket. It will be taken up, and the court will issue appropriate decisions. Now let me talk to you a bit about, if I might, about how the court reaches decisions. We generally get briefs are written arguments by the lawyers. We generally have oral arguments so we can have an opportunity to ask the lawyers questions. And after we have written briefs and oral argument, the court meets in a conference room, which is a large room in the state capitol. The seven of us sit at the table, doors closed, and debate the issues. One of us is assigned usually to write the opinion. When the opinion is circulated, all of us get a chance to say what's good, bad, and ugly. And opinions are rewritten in accordance with the conference notes. And people write dissents or concurring opinions. A dissent is not only disagree with you, but your reasoning is bad. And a concurrence says, oh, I agree with you, but your reasoning could be better. And when that's all done, then an issue, then the decision is released. And if you want to read about the case and you want to read the actual decision, you would go to our website, wicourts.gov.
And it's a very thorough process.
Yes, should be. We decide important issues, affect the people of the state of Wisconsin, and it should be a thorough, carefully considered process, which doesn't mean you can take all of 1, 2, 3, 5 years. You know, you really want to do a job, it may be a lifetime, but that's not the way we act either.
So something with voter ID, there have been some pressures that the Supreme Court would come to a decision by the recalls or fall, and you're saying that could happen, that may not happen?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, another current event that I'd like to talk with you about. Recently, a committee found that Justice David Prosser was accused of ethics code violations for allegedly putting his hands around your neck last year. I'm wondering if you can comment on that or talk about the process that led to that decision.
Well, that decision was, I'm sorry, Ann. I want to answer it.
Okay, you can answer it.
I'm senior. That decision was a decision by the Judicial Commission. And under the statutes in the Constitution of the Wisconsin, the Judicial Commission investigates an allegation. And then if it thinks it's worthy, we'll make a charge. And there's a process for handling that. And the process is that there's a panel of the Court of Appeals, appointed by the Court of Appeals, and it determines the facts and the law. And Justice Prosser has admitted that his hands were around Justice Bradley's throat, and the issue is whether that's a violation of the code as charged. And this is an issue that may very well come before our court. So this is one where wait and see. But that's the process, and it's a troublesome process. And both Justice Bradley and I and Justice Crooks testified before a legislative committee, a joint legislative committee, saying we really should have a revision of this process. Because where a justice is charged, then we're going to sit in on a fellow justice, and we're a colleague of the Court of Appeals is charged, then the Court of Appeals sits on a fellow colleague. And this is very uncomfortable because we have to work with that person. So we're sitting in judgment with them, and then we're working with them at the same time. And in this case, as you know from the facts, it's going to be even harder. So all three of us have advocated that there be a separate and different process. And the legislature can do that.
And Justice Bradley, what separate process would you like to see?
A process, perhaps, and some have been discussed in the past. I know a former state representative, Greg Huber, who's now a judge, when he was a representative, introduced legislation for a constitutional amendment that would call for a panel of Court of Appeals judges and even some former Supreme Court justices to sit in that capacity. You know, it's a real problem, and our court, I think, is experiencing it now and has experienced it in the past, the very issue that the Chief Justice talks about, and that is imposing discipline on one of our own. You know, we became a state in 1848, and the first time that a court imposed discipline on one of its own was within the last 10 years in Justice Ziegler's race. So all of those years, this has never come up. And I think hers was 2007. And the court, for the first time in the history of the state, imposed discipline on one of its members. And that was followed shortly after that the race involving Justice Gableman and former Justice Butler. And Justice Gableman was charged the second time in the history of the state with ethics violations. And, of course, the court split 3-3 on that. And technically that case is still pending in the office of the Judicial Commission. So this raises really difficult issues for the court. There's a better way of handling it. And I'm not sure that the proposal by then-Representative Huber was the best answer, but at least it's a step forward, and it provided and would provide a forum for discussion to come up with an answer that I think so vitally needed.
The public hears so much about the disharmony within the court. I'm sure you all get along at other points, too. But are you trying to improve the relationship with the justices within the Supreme Court? And what steps can you take?
Well, as you know, and I think this is very important that your listeners know, the court is getting out its work as usual. Opinions are being disseminated and published. We're deciding rules, petitions. We're admitting lawyers to the bar. And we're disciplining lawyers and doing all of the work of the public. You know, the court is part of government. And as you know from the newspapers, government has had a hard time in the last couple of years with the great divisions and
And not
issues.
Just state government, federal government,
oh, yeah.
Local government.
Right, and legislative and executive and judicial. And it's very important that the court system should be perceived as being fair, impartial, neutral, and nonpartisan. The courts work for all the people of the state, and we resolve disputes for the people, and we have to resolve disputes on the basis of the facts and law only. There should be no personal agendas. Decisions have to be free from the influence of special interest groups, political parties, or the governor or the legislature. Now, as Chief Justice of the Court, I am committed to lead the Court in working together for openness and court accountability to the people of this state. Sunshine is a great disinfectant. And when I sit on the bench, I am standing up as Chief Justice for all the people of this state. The people want a fair, impartial, neutral, and nonpartisan court, and that's what we should be, and we should be working for it. Now, in September, I put out for court discussion a series of proposals to improve the working relationships of the court and do it in the open and public so that the people of the state can see us work together and can know that we are working together. Now, collegiality doesn't mean we have to agree. Doesn't mean we have to agree. In fact, it's very important that people on the court also disagree on substance, because why have seven people if we all agree? We're overpaying six. Just pay one. The point of seven people is to have seven minds, seven views, seven viewpoints, so that when we sit together, we can learn from each other, and then we hope we can reach a consensus, which all agree, and many times we do. But it's very important for the development of the law to also not always agree and put out different ideas. So I have put out numerous proposals for improving our system, which the court has discussed, but we have now shut down administrative conferences to the public. We have shut out the public. So while the court is doing its work, issuing opinions, making decisions, unfortunately, a majority of the court, not Ann and I, have shut out the public from open conferences. And I think this is very important that the public be aware of that. I think the issue of recusal and judicial discipline is very important to discuss with the public. And the issue of discipline, and much of this has arisen from elections, and elections are good. It's the money that's bad.
Because there's a lot of special interest money that has gotten involved in these elections.
In state and out of state, and we don't even know who they are. So this is become a real problem, leading to discipline issues. So we have to talk about these things with the public and listen to their concerns.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Our next question comes from Brad Williams of Wisdom Radio.
And this can go to both of you at once. You can decide who answers in which order. Continuing with the discussion of how the court members get along and the political or the ideological division that appears on the court, and Justice Abrahamson, you've been there more than 30 years, and so maybe there was a time where it wasn't as contentious as this, or it wasn't necessarily seen as politically divided as that. Was there such a time, and could we see such a time again? What would have to happen?
Well, the court is always a little different every year. No 2 years are the same. Sometimes it's because there's a change of personnel. Other times, the nature of the cases, or just the total environment. We're affected by the total environment, as you pointed out. The environment of all government, local, state, federal, is very different in the last 2 years and three than it was 10 years ago. And we've had times of dissension in the court and times where, and it's very public. So I always go back to the year 1849. And that was 1 year after the state. I wasn't on the court then. That was 1 year after we became a state. And the Chief Justice was Alexander Scow. And at that time, there wasn't a separate Supreme Court. There were circuit court judges, and they would come to Madison once a year, and they would sit as an appellate court for all their decisions. They'd come to the court. And what happened in 1849 was in two cases, the majority of the court voted that the Chief Justice, sitting as a circuit court judge, had erred, made a mistake, and the Supreme Court was going to reverse him. That did not make him very happy. And so in an outburst, which probably wasn't very judicious, but you can understand it from the human factor of being reversed twice in rapid succession by his buddies, he said of the court that they are consummate blockheads. So I haven't heard that since 1849.
Nice to know you don't call each other blockheads.
Right. Or consummate blockheads.
Sure, consummate blockheads.
I mean, if you're going to be a blockhead, you may as well be a perfect blockhead. So, I mean, you get that. And if you read opinions of the United States Supreme Court, you'll see very sharp words used. Well, sometimes the person you disagree with in this case becomes your bosom buddy and agrees with you in the next case, and you wonder, how did he get so smart so fast? So you have to understand that about courts. People feel very passionate about matters, and you want them to be passionate. You want them to not be personally committed as an ideology, but you want them to care. So things should be better, and I have made proposals that the court consider bringing in someone who might help the court and various work activities. Unfortunately, that was not adopted by the court. I think I lost that one 4-3. But that doesn't mean I stop trying. I want to lead the court to where we are and are perceived as doing the public's work, open and accountable, and that we're fair, impartial, neutral, and nonpartisan. And we have to be facing the people of this state and reassuring them and rebuilding trust and confidence in the court system and bringing us to the days where this court is recognized as one of the best courts in the entire country.
Now, along the same lines, there is the idea of merit selection rather than putting the justices up to election as we do now. And, well, partly we are there because many of the people who have come onto the court in recent years were appointed and then had to run for re-election. Is that something you would see the legislature actively pursuing in the future, or does that system work fine right now, is putting it up to election?
Right now, pending before the legislature, is a proposal by Senator Tim Cullen, a Democrat from Janesville, and Senator Dale Schultz, a Republican from Richland Center.
Which is your hometown.
Which is my hometown, indeed. And the proposal is to change the way that justices are selected, changing from the elected method that we have now to an appointed method. I think there's a little difficulty getting traction with that legislation. I think by that I mean I think that there's real merit in discussing it, but politically I'm not sure how popular it is. You know, we became a state, as I said before, in 1848, and we started out after two constitutional conventions deciding that we would have judges be elected in this state. And that, of course, was at a time that was a very populist period in our state's history and in the history of our nation. A poll taken not too long ago, I think last summer, indicated that only about a quarter of the people polled would prefer an appointed system over an elected system. So that's why I indicate there's a little difficulty in getting traction in that proposal. People don't want to give up their right to vote. Yet, I have great concerns about our system as it now stands. That is, our system with election. I favor elections, but I think our system has to be reformed, because without reform, I question whether or not our system, the integrity of our system can be maintained. The integrity of our system is being challenged by the huge amount of outside special interest money that have poured into this state in an unprecedented manner. People in Wisconsin are aware of this, but perhaps don't realize that Wisconsin is really considered the poster child for bad judicial elections nationwide. And recently, or not too long ago, a few months ago, the New York Times had an editorial about judicial elections in the state that touched upon judicial elections in the state of Wisconsin. In the 2000, we started to see the influx of special interest money in the 2007 and 2008 special elections in an unprecedented fashion. There's a book that's a book of fiction, John Grisham, wrote a book called The Appeal. And unfortunately, some of that fiction appears to be playing out in the state of Wisconsin. So there's much to discuss about the way that we select judges and the need for reform if we're going to maintain an elected judiciary.
For the sake of reform, is there one particular idea you'd like to see considered in the near future?
Well, I think public financing is an idea that should be advanced. Wisconsin, not all that long ago, a few decades ago, was a leader in public financing in this country when it came to the public financing of elected races. And of course, the judicial races benefited from them. That's now been done away with. We have to come up with a proposal and a mechanism to take money out of judicial races.
Or at least disclosure, if we can do that.
That's
constitutionally.
Right. That's the second thing, Chief. And that is we need meaningful and constitutional disclosure rules, and we need meaningful recusal rules. So those are three concrete proposals that I think need further discussion. We have to do something to reform our system of election of the judiciary. Now, our system, you know, of course, isn't just focused on the judicial branch of government. I think in the state and the federal executive and legislative branches, they are also being challenged by the corrupting force of money in our democracy. But it's particular to the it's particularly harmful to the judicial branch, because the judicial branch is to be fair, neutral, impartial, and nonpartisan, above the fray of special interests. And so it's a very real and pressing problem.
And Chief Justice Abramson?
Well, people have to vote on judicial elections in many of the elections in April, you know, when nonpartisan candidates are up for school board, county board, mayors, city council, et cetera, and judges. You know, it's a high turnout if you get 20%. So that's, you get 20%. If they divide, you really get, 11% of the population voting for a judge, and judges make important decisions that affect the entire community. And you should be voting for a judge who is scholarly, who is going to do the work, who is absolutely committed to nonpartisanship, fair and neutral and impartial. So you got to get the people out there listening and voting.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson and Justice Ann Walsh Bradley of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The two of you are in town this week because you are presenting Wisconsin Women Celebrating Their Contributions on the UW-La Crosse campus. I'm wondering if we can talk about women in the judicial system. On the Wisconsin Supreme Court, there are 4 women and 3 men. Is that rare? And what difference does that make?
Well, it used to be rare. Now there are probably several states that have 4 women. And, of course, since the courts change, some years there'll be more and some years less. I think that there are only 3 states in the union that have no women on the highest court.
Do you know what that is?
Well, one is Indiana. And I've forgotten the other two. One may be Idaho now, and I've forgotten the third. But there are very few that have no women. Indiana did have a woman on the court, but she left. So does it matter? When you have more than one judge on a court, what you want is diversity of all kinds. You'd want geographical diversity in the state. You'd want age diversity. You would want experience diversity. You would legal experience, you know, diversity. But you'd also want life's experiences to be diverse. And women and men have different life's experiences. And they can bring that to the court. Does that mean all the women vote together? No. Does it mean all the men vote together? No. I think there's been only one case in our history where there was a division of men and women, and the media felt that that was very important. But in all the years I've been on the court, which is 37, that was the only case. It was a case where a judge had ordered a man not to have any more children until he supported the children he then had. All the men said that was a perfectly good order and all the women said, no. It was a very interesting case.
But there was a period of time that you were the only woman on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Was that much different than your situation now?
I think there's a greater comfort level seeing a diverse court. But, you know, I date back to having graduated law school in 1956 when only 4% of the entire legal population in the country were women. So for me to be alone in the practice of law or to be alone on the court, if you felt badly about doing that, you just had to go home. So that didn't mean I thought it was a good idea. I don't. You want all sorts of experiences. So it's great to have more women. It's great to have men. It's great to have people of geographical diversity, racial and ethnic diversity on all courts because they bring life's experiences.
And Justice Bradley, do you want to talk about the state of women within the judicial system?
Well, we have some very talented women judges and men judges. I think Wisconsin and our circuit court judges is really fortunate in having good, strong, dedicated judges. In terms of numbers, for our circuit court judges, which is our trial court level, women comprise 14% of the total, which is a pretty low number when you consider that since the mid-70s, law schools have been graduating close to 50% women in the legal or in the law school law school classes. So, 14%. Pretty low, especially when you compare us to our neighbors. Minnesota has either 26 or 28% of its trial level judges serving as women, women serving as judges. Iowa, the low 20s, Illinois, the low 20s, Michigan, the low 20s, and then there we are at 14%. We can and should do better. In 1993, I was part of a group that put together a seminar called The Judicial Glass Ceiling, which was to encourage women to consider joining the judiciary. And a number of women from around the state attended that seminar. I was reminded today that La Crosse County Circuit Court Judge Ramona Gonzalez, when she was an attorney, attended that seminar. And it brings a smile to my face when you can do something that makes a difference. That seminar made a difference. A number of our judges who are currently serving came to that seminar and apparently felt some sort of inspiration. And we're doing another one. October in Milwaukee, we're putting together a group, a steering committee, that will hold another seminar to assist women who are interested in knowing more about running for judge or being appointed as a judge. And I'm looking forward to the participation of women throughout the state at this seminar. We can and we will do better.
Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Ann Walsh Bradley and Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson were in La Crosse earlier this week. I'd like to thank Brad Williams from Wisdom Radio for helping ask questions. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk to the editor of the Pulitzer Prize-winning PolitiFact, which measures the accuracy of politicians' claims. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also now on Facebook. Like us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.